Blog Talk Radio. California.
All right. It's good afternoon. It's Tuesday, and the third of three shows that we're doing from Sherm Talent in Orlando. This is Mike Vandervoort. I have Andrew Morton, Sherm Social, on Twitter, at Sherm Social. And I also have Julie and Chuck from the Department of Labor. And our topic today is going to be a panel discussion around talent acquisition and diversity hiring. We may have an additional guest join us a little bit later in the show. We're not sure yet. We're doing this stuff on the fly. So I want to welcome everybody to Drive Thru. Thanks for doing the show. And I'm going to ask Andrew to start, and we'll ask each guest to give their quick bio and who they work for. So Andrew?
Sure, great. Well, first of all, Michael, thanks for taking the time. I mean, we have over 1,300 people here at Talent, and it's really been a great discussion. Our general session with Kat Cole that we just had is an amazing opportunity to really see how a diversity of experience that kind of led her all in the direction that she came into. But my background is I'm the director of Sherm's social engagement, but my mom, as she asked me a couple years ago when I got the job, I don't run a dating site. You know, it's my it's my job basically to engage through social media and communications and work through the public affairs directorate. Worked for the organization on many different fronts, but also from a background perspective, I served 21 years in the military. I was an Army officer. It took me to an incredible wealth of opportunity in terms of experiences and places that I've been and things that I've seen, 30 different countries. And what's truly remarkable about it is now that I get a chance to work for Sherm, I get an opportunity to really be a part of this human resource capacity to support not only folks with disabilities, but disabled veterans and other things that are near and dear to me from my own personal perspective. So it's an honor to be here with our partners at ODEP, and it's an honor to be here talking about disability opportunities and hiring practices that support diversity. So thanks for having
great.
Me.
You're great. Julie?
My name is Julie Clark. I'm an attorney and a policy advisor at the Department of Labor. We're here from the Office of Disability Employment Policy, and so our focus is a whole range of policy issues as they relate to getting a job, staying on the job, when you have a disability or chronic health condition. And I'm also our lead on the Partnership on Employment and Accessible Technology, or PEAT. And we've been working for a couple years now looking at technology and the barriers that it can create for people with disabilities, with a range of disabilities, to get hired and to perform on the job. And right now we're doing a lot of work looking at how the technology that's used in the talent acquisition process, what are the accessibility challenges with that? And so it's great to be at the Talent Management Conference. And I'll turn it to Chuck, my colleague.
Well, good afternoon, and it's a delight to be here, and we really appreciate Sherm asking us to be on the show. I'm Chuck Connedy, and I identified with your mother comment. I started my life in the private sector. I started in the entertainment industry, and in particular in film sound, and then I was in telecom, and my mother was certain that I was bouncing sound waves off, and there was spot moon, and there was no getting her off that point. She was... God love her. Now, I have been with the Office of Disability Employment Policy since 2002, and I love the job. I'm in the Policy Communications and Outreach Group. Report to a wonderful Tajadeen. ODEP is a small organization. In my eyes, it's probably the best small organization in the U.S. government. We only have 50 people.
There are small organizations
yes,
in the U.S.
Are.
Government.
Small organizations, and one of our assistant secretaries said, once you're the best kept secret in the whole U.S. government, then we're going to change that. So our alliance with Sherm was one of those efforts to increase our visibility and to serve the nation. We're now actually in the fourth of a two-year alliance, and we'll be renewing hopefully in the fall. we've done so many things with SHRM over the years. And a few years ago, Mike Aitken and Nancy Hammer said to us, you know, you really ought to be focusing on talent management. You can probably have the most effect there. We thought, well, that's kind of a narrow focus of what we're doing because we cover such a broad range of employment issues for people with disabilities. As Julie said, we're the only federal agency that coordinates with federal and state governments specifically for the employment of people with disabilities with high-end practices. And ODEP is primarily a policy agency that is researching and evaluating best practices to increase the employment of people with disabilities. As part of the policy communications and outreach group and the primary contact with SHRM for ODEP, you know, our responsibility is to get this great work out into the world. And so really value this opportunity to chat a little bit about
great.
It. Thank you.
And I mentioned at the beginning of the show that we had a forecast en route, and she has joined us, and that's Bettina Danis from SHRM. You want to introduce yourself to the drive-thru audience, Bettina?
Well, good afternoon to everyone who's listening. My name, again, is Bettina Danis. I am the Vice President of Human Resources and Diversity for SHRM. With SHRM for about 18 months now. Very excited that I get to work with something that I'm very close to and passionate. I worked in the area of diversity for many years, especially when I was back within MLB in baseball, looking at bringing diversity into something that is totally dominated by one force. SHRM is very proud of the collaboration that we have had with the Office of Disability Employment Policy, ODEP, and I'm here. I'm very proud to be sharing this forum with Chuck. And I learned that we have worked collaboratively for over 10 years since 2006, promoting the business case for hiring these diverse groups. We made it in the last 18 months to really focus, because when you're talking about diversity, it's so inclusive of so many different areas, but our focus has been with individuals with disabilities, invisible disabilities, and also with veterans, especially because in the area that we reside, in the Washington, Baltimore metropolitan area.
Okay, great, thanks. Someone shared with me a couple of facts, and one of those is that in the United States, according to the U.S. Census, about 19% of the U.S. workforce has some sort of disability, whether visible or invisible. I didn't get it. I don't know what year the census that you know been from the last one. And then the other thing, which have worked on the employer side, not necessarily nonprofit, nor certainly not in public sector. The average cost for an accommodation of a disability is just $500. So I think those are, I think those are, even those numbers, and I've done HR for almost 30 years, in some ways were a little surprising to me to hear those. And I especially feel visible disability to be, because that means, you know, that's the one hard spot, right? So I think the first thing I would ask is, so how do you, ODEP, how do you work with, I mean, you've got a partnership with SHRM, we also bring you into the HR sphere, I guess. How do you work with private employers, or how could private employers work with you guys to help with these kind of things, if that's a thing?
Well, you mentioned the accommodation, and that number is absolutely accurate. It comes to us through one of our grantees based at Virginia University, the Job Accommodation Network, sometimes known as JAN. JAN predates ODEP's arrival on the scene, and they are the penultimate authority on accommodations. 40 years, I think, they have been around. It's as is every organization in ODEP, and you know, the organization that we work with, very passionate about what they do. They're also extraordinarily intelligent, and they know how to implement. And the folks at JAN have been doing these surveys for years because there is this, you know, anecdotal information that, oh, that accommodation costs $15,000. The mean is actually right around $500. This does come to a shock to everyone. It can mean something as simple as raising a desk, or putting blocks under a desk. Yes, there are more expensive accommodations. One that we heard about that floored us was about $100,000, and it turned out that the CEO of a corporation had a Mercedes, and he wanted special driving instruments within the car, and so it was about $100,000 accommodation for him. Everybody else is down in this $500 range. So that is great, great comfort people who tune into that and realize this is not an impossible thing to do. JAN gets over 40,000 calls a year, confidential, all confidentially, for employers and employees calling in saying, well, how do I deal with this? What should I do? What are my options? JAN is an expert organization that has counselors who are trained in all areas of disability employment who can answer these questions. They also deliver over 1,400 trainings a year directly to employers. The way to get a hold of JAN is, the simplest is go to askjan.org, and there you're going to get a hold of someone who is going to really be able to help you with the practicalities of working with a person with disabilities so that person can add value to your organization.
Okay. For the show folks, how do you work with show members to drive some strategy and tactics around this topic?
Well, it continues to be a struggle, I think, for a lot of employers to recruit the, you know, all candidates that will qualify for their jobs. And we understand there's a gap skills, and sometimes not being able to reach out to all candidates that have that ability, continue to be a problem for us is, you know, we are particularly excited this year that we're able to focus along with ODEP on new tools to ensure that members are missing out on talent, making sure they have the right cutting edge technology based recruiting methods works that for all job applicants, regardless of whether they have a disability or not.
Okay. So tools.
Speaking from personal experience, but I've talked to a lot of our members, and that's about coming to conferences. It's analogous to really used to work at Pentagon. The longer you're there, the more you've lost sight of reality. You've got to be out amongst people. So when I get a chance to go out and be amongst our members, whether it's the restaurant, hospitality industry, or medical industry, or whatever the industry is, what I find is everybody wants to really do the right thing on both counts, both for the business case and also if it's altruistically necessary to basically support a broader cause, whether it's hiring disabled veterans or just. And what I found is, for example, the cost to support disability at $500 or whatever that may be, it's a small price to pay for the element that individual brings into your workforce, the experience they have, what they may have already overcome or experienced in their life. And, you know, from a veteran perspective, I think the most important thing that if you don't hire a veteran because it's the right thing to do per se, it's going to help the bottom line because there's going to be a global component of experience. There's going to be an attitude. It is a challenge to go from the world of we will military to at world of the private sector. Challenge. It's an obstacle challenge in some cases. But what I've found to be just so inspiring is the commitment that our members have within organizations to support diversity and support veterans hiring. You know, 8 of our pinnacle award winners from 2015 alone, awards being a Sherman volunteer or chapters are working in their individual communities and councils. There were military-focused initiatives, not all on talent acquisition, but just in some way. So the sea of goodwill, as Admiral Mullen used to call it, is full in the HR community. It's just, it's an amazing thing to be part of. What I have to bring to the table is to help connect those dots and help bring some awareness in there, that cultural awareness and everything else.
Okay. Julia, I wanted to ask you, and you haven't had a chance to say that. Bettina mentioned bringing tools. So, mm-hmm. So what kind of tools, and that's your end of the deal, I guess, mm-hmm. is technology, right? What's available? Most of our audience are HR practitioners or employers, right? So what's available? What kind of stuff is out there that people should be taking a look at?
Well, we have a new tool that's designed specifically for HR folks. So that's the one obviously I want to talk about. It's called TalentWorks. And what we're focusing on is first iteration. It's very much an evolving tool. It's an online tool. And the focus of the initial round of talent workstation is related to e-recruiting, online job applications, digital news, the whole range of things that go into recruiting and hiring. We're adding additional materials for later on in the job process to help folks figure out technology needs that are on the job. A lot of the issues are the same, though, a lot of the accessibility challenges. We started a few years ago in our office. We were looking at employment support, the things that make it possible for a person with a disability to get hired and stay on the job. And we were hearing that there was a lot of problems with online job applications. More and more, a few years ago, it was that. Excuse me, that common. And now, pretty much, that's how everybody applies for a job online. And one of the things hearing from folks with a whole range of disabilities was that it times out. The space that you have to enter and answer times out. Or I had a colleague who was blind, who was typing his answer, but never said, the limit was 1,000 words or something. Never said you're done. So he's typing, and none of it saved. And it way beyond limit. That seems like very simple things. But we started talking with some of the IT developers that are out there that are working in developing these software programs. And there were very simple fixes for most of these things. But some of the features were either not turned on or the employers that were buying didn't know about. And they said, we've heard this, but we don't know the issue. So we did a national survey over the course of about 8 months. And came up with some interesting statistics. One being that almost 50% of people that applied for a job online that had a disability could not complete the application. And that included people who then called the supposed help desk or the numbers that employers were giving. And these were, for the most part, individuals who were qualified for the job for which they were applying for. So you're looking at almost 50% of the people that are applying for your positions can't even get in the front door and complete the application, much less a pre-employment test or some other, tools that's online. That's a huge problem. I mean, that's a whole lot of talent that employers are missing out on. So what we did was pulled the developer community, HR folks, and people with disabilities together to develop TalentWorks. And so literally, it provides basic information on the main accessibility challenges, like the timeout issue, what to do if you've got someone who wants to access the content in a way other than a mouse, how you can access it by using the keyboard, what things have to be done in the coding to do that. And so we don't expect HR folks to actually make those fixes, but what we've got for them is sort of plain language descriptions of what the issues are and what we heard from folks, and then tip sheets that they can take their IT folks and say, we need to do these three things so that this field doesn't come out. And so it's very straight. Should I give the web address?
Yeah, please do. Okay. In fact, I was going to ask you that.
Okay.
Please do. Yeah.
It's PeatWorks, P-E-A-T, and then a / TalentWorks.
Okay. And what's the Pete part?
Pete is the Partnership for Employment and Accessible Technology.
Got
and
it.
We actually have a whole range of tools for PeatWorks for employers. We have an employer action kit. We have, we do what we call PEAK talks. They're similar to TED Talks. Once where it's just 15 minutes, some innovator, some employer talks about an issue that we're hearing about, and then people can call in and ask questions. Webinar, a lot of training resources, so there's a lot of resources on the PEAT website.
Are there social media channels for those?
Twitter, Facebook, we're on both. We do Twitter chats. I'm still not. Andrew would know
Twitter.
We
know the Twitter handle.
Yes.
At PeatWorks.
PeatWorks.
Okay, yeah. Great.
And we're doing a webinar later this month that'll focus on TalentWorks and all the features that are there. But again, a lot of the accessibility issues that are in an online application are the same that are going to be there later in an e-learning environment for employee training.
Mm-hmm.
So these fixes can really make a huge difference.
Okay.
In terms of
employee. So kind of a follow-up to that, I'll give a biased shout out. I worked in Florida for the last decade or so for public supermarkets, and they're recognized for employing many, many folks with disabilities of all kinds. It's kind of an inherent thing that they do. But a very large $30 billion company, 200,000, right? So that they have a lot of resources. It doesn't mean they do it because they have a lot of resources. They do it because they believe in it. It's a positive work strategy. It brings a lot of talent into the pipeline, as you pointed out. But not everybody's a $30 billion or even a $1 billion company, right? So small employers with only a few things. How do you tackle an issue like this as a small or medium-sized business? Are there certain strategies that someone could undertake?
Well, I can give my take. And I actually, we're at Talent Management. I attended a class yesterday, and someone said something that was very interesting. And it was this: disability is the only minority status that is going to affect all of us at one point in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about disability, you only have a visual of, you know, what disability looks like, and you go in as an employer thinking, okay, I need to hire more people with, you know, for instance, in the supermarket business, the individuals with Down syndrome.
Right.
There is this notion that they're very friendly, they can do customer service, people are endeared by them, and I think that's a mistake. I think when we're talking about disability, we're talking about inclusion, and we're thinking about giving the opportunity to all people, regardless of what challenges they may face. So it's upon the employer to create tools that talk to everyone. You know, we're looking for a specific skill and ability, and it can come in any form, sort, color, with, you know, any specific challenges or, you know, in this case, disabilities. So the burden should be on the employer to use all these tools that are available to us. I mean, how many employees or prospective employees go to a website and face the challenges that Julie was mentioning? I mean, 50% of them. And so, you know, I think it's, you know, it doesn't have to be one of those things where, you know, it is our goal because we have a quota or because, you know, there's a compliance aspect to it where we have to hire 7% of our employees now to be members with disability. We have to kind of be a lot more inclusive of that and don't think and limit ourselves based on compliance.
It's kind of the real challenge of defining diversity, right, is the perception that it is a quota system or a numbers game.
Our first assistant secretary said something like what you heard, and he, in almost every speech, he said, somewhere tonight within 50 miles, someone is going to acquire a disability, and it just shocked the audience. It would happen. I think that, you know, from the 30,000 foot view, the tide has turned. It's no longer, in the most cases, an employer issue saying no. And it's not just because of the laws and regulations and 503 and OFCCP and whatnot. They realize that this is a valuable asset. People with disabilities know that they now have a chance. Youth coming up are used to having people with disabilities in their classes.
Mm-hmm.
We have several different focus groups within our an organization. We have a youth focus group, a workforce systems focus group, workforce support, as Julie was saying, research and evaluation, because we do analytics. We find out what's really happening. We have an employer group. The Department of Labor has already put out about $109 million in to the work is to address a problem that has been repeated several times, many times, as I've been talking with people here at the conference. The link, we want them, they are there, how do we put us together? And there are so many loose ends that need to be tied up and are being tied up. And this WIOA is addressing the issue of America's job centers, the run by the Department of Labor through the states,
right,
to make them more accessible to people with disabilities, to give the training to the people with disabilities so that they are ready to then, you know, employer calls up in a local job center and says, I need, and they will have someone there. So the government has really been working hard to address these linkage issues. And as I say, I think the tide has turned. Now it's up to all of us to figure out how to tie up these loose ends so that it's an efficient. As we know, as we see all this wonderful electronic and web-based acquisition work going on, the mentality is there, the tools are there, they just need to be tweaked and refined. And that's one of the things that Julian and her group do with Pete.
So it's somewhat of an infrastructure question for some employers and other agencies that are trying to do the work, right?
It is, although it's much easier, I think, than people think. When we talked with Oracle, for example, that produces some of the talent management software that's out there, a huge market share of the talent management software that's out there, they said that they have found employers that simply have not turned on the accessibility features in their software. So it's there. They sell to the U.S. government. They have to meet what are called the Section 508 standards. They have to sell technology that's accessible. So it's there, but smaller employers, particularly if they've customized it, if they've just not turned on certain features, sometimes it's that simple. In addition, we've talked with a lot of employers that have seen a real return on investment. A company that should remain unnamed that got sued for their inaccessible website by a customer, and they ended up having reaching a settlement agreement with the Department of Justice that found that they were violating the Americans with Disabilities Act because their customer site was not accessible. Well, they made the changes, and what they found is now, first of all, there's a lot of purchasing power that people with disabilities and their families have. And they found they were able to actually document the significant increase in terms of people buying through their website. A significant increase amongst older Americans that maybe had some vision issues or some motor skill difficulties that were not able to access their website. And a sideline of that was that if they hadn't thought about it, now they could engage potential employees in a way that they hadn't even thought about before. Their website was now accessible to customers. They had done it because they wanted to increase the customer base. But lo and behold, it's really expanded their employee base.
Benefit.
Yeah, and they are now out there speaking to the world on how this has just been amazing for business. And initially, I'm assuming when they went into that lawsuit, they were not expecting this to be a wonderful thing. We try to talk about is all the tools that are out there for employers. Jan, which Chuck mentioned, again, a free service. If you have a question about an accommodation, or you can call and ask a stupid question. You can say, I don't even understand what I'm supposed to do for a person using a wheelchair. Do I got to have special stuff? And mostly you don't need special stuff. You might need the free blocks to go under the table, like Chuck mentioned. But that's a service that's out there. We have the workforce program, which Chuck may want to talk about a little bit, which is an internship program. It's college students and grad students who have been screened and vetted and from all over the country, thousands of them. And so there's a database of these students that can be searched by state, by talent, by major for either an internship or permanent hire. And we've found a lot of employers that, for whatever reason, are nervous, say, about hiring someone who's blind. They're just not sure how it's going to work out. And they've hired a WRP student, found out it worked out just fine, just like any other college student that they hired. You know, the skill match is good.
Hold that point, Chuck, because I don't want to lose it, but I want to, Andrew, I was eavesdropping while in the press room the other day while you were having a conversation with somebody else about veterans.
That's what the press room is for.
Yeah, I know. It was a very interesting conversation about the perspective that you have on veterans that return to the U.S. with, you know, in many cases, perhaps invisible disabilities because people can't see the stress and some of the things, right? And you shared a little bit. So I wonder if you might touch on that for a minute.
Well, sure. And you know, the statistics alone, 1 in 3 veterans who transition, who served in post-9/11 uniform are going to have a disability rating when they leave the military service. That's about 2 or 3 times the rate that historically it's been in the past. Now, fortunately, that's in some large part the byproduct of accepting the culture and awareness of behavioral health challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning if I were a Vietnam veteran, I surely had PTSD, but nobody diagnosed me as such, and I didn't get the treatment that I deserved. And we know, unfortunately and tragically, how that ended up happening down the road 20, 30 years later. So we see a lot of veterans today who do suffer from the invisible wounds of war, myself included, who have to face a challenging acclimation. But one of the things that helps the acclimation, ironically, is folks who are willing to ask and to probe and to kind of discuss these things with you. And I know this is not a piece of technology, but I will tell you that a lot of people with invisible disabilities aren't afraid to share what they have gone through if those in the workplace, managers or otherwise, are willing to ask. And it kind of helps, you know, that process, because there are many who will not check that box. They will simply not check that box, even if they have that disability rating, because they're worried of the stigma of how that may set them in a position of disadvantage before even getting the job. So I think that's one part of it. The other part is organizations do an amazing job in this day and age, I think, of helping us understand what our purpose is. And sometimes it may be through some sort of charitable cause. And Kat Cole hit on this in her presentation today. She talked about the overwhelming sense of purpose that you get when you go out and you support something else. And I think a lot of veterans and many people from all walks of life, frankly, when you're serving in the workplace, sometimes you may lose that sense of purpose. And if your organization can help you achieve it through some other means, like a volunteerism or something that can help the local community, Habitat for Humanity, or Brothers and Big Sisters, then you see those behavioral health challenges kind of overcome by that sense of purpose. And there's a gratitude on the part of the employee because they recognize the fact that the organization is helping them beyond some of the other things that they're offering them in terms of benefits. So, you know, it's hard to transition back to the civilian sector from serving in uniform, let alone if you have a disability. But I would say that the most important thing is just a culture of understanding. And HR practitioners are really the pointed end of that spear.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are the ones, whether it's somebody with a disability in terms of being in a wheelchair, or whether it's a behavioral health challenge that someone's facing because of service in uniform or anything else, it's that human resources person that's going to be the first person that really sets the tone for the organization. So it's beyond accessibility.
So the keynote yesterday, Jim Knight, who I've known for a long time, and I've known Kat for a while too, very passionate about organizations like Share Our Strength, No Kids Hungry, and many others. And they kind of lead their lives in that way. It's very admirable. Not every person is as devoted as they are. But I think that, you know, and they kind of get into this conscious capitalism movement, people, profit, planet. There's a lot of evidence that having that as part of your business culture actually produces a lot of profit. But what I hear you saying is a little bit different, is that it's great to talk to people about your mission and your values and their performance and all this stuff, but you need to really touch their human frailty in a way, whether that's a disability or anything. And it goes back to knowing your people and as a supervisor or a manager. I guess I'm being a little bit lecturing, sorry.
No, it's interesting. And in that vein, I talked with an HR person at Labor once who said, when it came talking about accommodations, and she goes, you know, we all got something. You know, you might label it a disability, you might label it, you know, stress, you might label it, you know, just too many kids, you might, but we all got something. And the more that we can figure out how to support each other with our something in the workplace, the better we all will work.
We're down to, believe it or not, we booked a 45-minute show, and we have about 9.5 minutes left. So the conversation's going, but it doesn't take long for four people to talk for 10 minutes each. Chuck, you had a program you wanted to mention, I think?
Well, first and foremost, I want to plug our website so okay. that people can get to it. It's www.dol, excuse me, as in Department of Labor, dol.gov/ODAP. And from there, you can link to all our different programs, yeah. tools, and whatnot. I'd be remiss if I left this room without talking about some of the things that we have done already with SHRM out in Atlanta. When we were doing what we called our sector summits, we went after a particular sector of business to learn about it, to hear, and to offer, and we had a manufacturing sector summit. And it was amazing to me that 250 people showed up on a Sunday morning in Atlanta and stayed for 4 hours as various speakers spoke about the tools and the tips and the tricks that they were using in order to increase the employment of people with disabilities. We also have, and this was sort of an outcome of that assistant secretary who said, we've got to get your word out there. We have the Campaign for Disability Employment. All of these wonderful things that ODEP is doing are worthless if the word doesn't get out about them and if people secondarily start using them. So SHRM, the American Association of People with Disabilities, the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce, the U.S. Business Leadership Network, Special Olympics, National Business Disability Council, and JAN came together, sat around a table with us and figured out what can we do to make a difference. They created the Campaign for Disability Employment. Campaign for Disability Employment has a whole set of tools that are primarily associated with public service announcements that we have created that have literally flabbergasted us with their success. And what you were saying about the personal aspects and whatnot of what Andrew was saying, we asked, station managers, why do you love this? Statistic, out of 1,800 PSAs shown last year, we were number 12. We've shown these PSAs almost 250,000 times in the years that they have, and that's across the nation, across time zones, across time elements and whatnot. It has to be very highly professionally produced. It has to touch the audience in a way that then thirdly makes them stay with the station. So they wouldn't be doing this just out of the goodness of their heart. The requirements aren't quite as strict as they used to be. They love these. We have discussion guides that go with these, and these discussion guides fly off the shelf. Access to those discussion guides is also available right through the site.
Okay.
We other have alliances, and I'll go through them really quickly, with the Professional Baseball Athletic Trainer Society.
Oh, thank you.
That is so much fun, I got to tell you. PBATS, as it's known, work with Topps baseball cards to come out with a set of baseball cards of players throughout the years who have had accessibilities, disabilities. A lot of the signs that umpires used are the result of an outfielder who couldn't hear, and he didn't know what was going on. SHRM knows the Family and Work Institute. We have an alliance with them. We have several other alliances, and I'll stop talking about those. It's just that we have those. We have EarnWorks. We have disability.gov, which is a portal to all the government's resources about disability. Come to ODEP and find out what you need, and we will help you.
Okay. Bettina, so we're down to about the last 5 minutes. So what – and I haven't, I, you,
don't feel like I've given you a chance to talk much. What would you add from a very high SHRM level that you kind of wrap with?
Well, I think the bottom line is that creating a diverse team of talent truly benefits all organizations. And for me and for, you know, for HR professionals, we really need to start focusing on how can we be more inclusive and how, you know, finding new and innovative ways and using our partners. You know, ODEP is there. I know there might be some employers that have a stigma of reaching out to the Department of Labor. You know, are they going to be checking us? Are we going to be audit? And that's not their job to do. In fact, in those cases, you know, Chuck was explaining, they have a very confidential mean of answering questions. So we got to stop and realize that the only way we can address the skill gap that we are facing, we're also seeing an increase in the competitive market. We have now for a very long time prospective employees turning down offers because they have a lot of opportunities, and it's becoming very, very competitive for employers. So the only way you address that is by being inclusive and finding talent where it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having the right tools, having the outreach programs. I think communication is key. We've seen some commercials that have really appealed to the emotion, and the fact that all of us, either ourselves or we actually know somebody that has a disability. There's a lot of, you know, stigma now with individuals that don't want to self-identify. We have to fix that. You know, I heard certain things where, you know, someone that is deaf doesn't really consider themselves disabled. They speak a different language. So how do we address that? You know, is that, you know, we have to change labels? We have to stop labeling people? The fact is that we have to find a way. And the technology is there, the intelligence is there, the understanding, you know, is there to figure this out.
So. Okay, thanks. So literally 2 minutes. So Andrew, I'm going to swing back to you for a moment. So first of all, thank you for the last 3 days for giving Drive-Thru a chance to have access to leaders at SHRM and the guests. We appreciate that very much. So thanks on behalf of William, Crystal, Nisha, and myself for that. How would you, and we'll close with you, Julie and Chuck. How would you, what would you end on today? We've got about a minute and a half left to go.
Well, I would just say that, you know, some people say like the American dream is to own a house or whatever else. I would say the real dream is just to have purpose. And employment for many people is a part of our purpose. And if you've served anything, whether you're a teacher or whether you're a doctor, you've served in uniform and you have a disability, you don't want that to strip you of your purpose. And having opportunities to work through ODEP and other organizations and to be a member of SHRM and to see these tools, it inspires me, because I know personally that when I retired in 2012, I didn't say I was going to give up my purpose. And so these types of things are important.
Okay. And on behalf of the federal government,
Obama, would you mind speaking for a moment, please?
Maybe above your pay grade. Sorry.
Yeah, way above my pay grade. What we've heard continually from Mike and Nancy and Bettina and the rest of the staff is we need to be more local in our view. And I'm telling you that, and telling the folks in the audience who want to know more about what we can do for them and whatnot, we're focusing on that. We are trying to figure out how we can use our resources to address your issues in your area. We have a lot of overlap. We've started a program. We've looked at the grants we have, the speeches we've had, the PSAs we've had, everything, and is layering these on and say, we can be there for you in some way. We're not quite ready for that yet, but that is what we're aiming.
Okay, thanks, Chuck. Julie?
Say ditto.
Okay, awesome. Well, I want to thank everybody for being on Drive Through HR. We're into the last 20 seconds. I'm going to take us out. This is the last day of 3 days of shows that we did at SHRM Talent, and thank you for listening in. And everybody have
a great rest of the week. This is Mike, and I'm out. That didn't work very well. Files are messed up, but all right, we'll end the show
is
on
that. Is this recording or mine?
It's recording as we go.